This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
If I asked you, you know, to turn a heavy earth-covered sweet potato into a delicate translucent thread of glass,
yeah,
you'd probably tell me I need to go find a magic wand.
Right, or like a highly advanced science lab.
Exactly. I mean, it sounds like an impossible culinary trick. But today, we are looking at a source dossier that does precisely that. And it claims you can pull it off in your own kitchen in about 25 minutes. So welcome to the deep dive.
Yeah, we have a really fascinating culinary source document today. It's specifically labeled Daily Source Pack, episode 00012.
And it's part of this broader, very thoughtfully designed series titled Korean Food, One Plate at a Time. Mm-hmm. Our mission for you today, you being the curious home cook who wants to expand your toolkit without, you know, needing a commercial kitchen, is to decode a famous Korean dish called japchae.
Right. We're really stripping this down to its mechanics, what it is, how the flavor architecture works, and why it's such an approachable gateway into a global cuisine.
Because this specific source dossier is really a masterclass in functional design. It's engineered explicitly for people cooking outside of Korea.
Oh, absolutely. It deliberately strips away that intimidation factor. You know, you are not looking at some inflexible, impossible standard designed for a royal court. The dossier provides a highly adaptable blueprint for the everyday kitchen.
Yeah, but to successfully execute any dish, you first have to understand the fundamental identity of the ingredients. And looking at the linguistic breakdown buried at the top of our source pack, the naming conventions present this really compelling puzzle.
They really do. So the Korean name is Sanya, Romanized and pronounced as Japchae.
Right, J-A-P-C-H-A-E. Mm-hmm. And the dossier firmly places it in the noodles category of Korean food. It actually provides an English search hint for the main ingredient, which is simply glass noodles.
But then immediately below that, it provides the Spanish translation for the dish, which is fideos de camote salteados.
Which translates literally to what? Sautéed sweet potato noodles?
Yeah, sautéed sweet potato noodles.
Okay, so that introduces a massive contradiction to my brain. I mean, the English search hint, glass noodles, sounds inherently fragile, right? Mm. It conjures up this image of something delicate, ethereal, just easily broken.
Sure, glass shatters.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But the Spanish translation grounds us in reality. Sweet potatoes, but sweet potatoes are hardy, heavy, dense root vegetables. Like, if you drop a sweet potato on your foot, you're going to feel it.
You're definitely going to feel it.
So I am really struggling to map the journey from a heavy, fibrous tuber to a delicate piece of glass. How does that happen?
Well, that physical disconnect between the raw ingredient and the final product is actually the core mechanical genius of the noodle. Because you're not taking a sweet potato, running it through a spiralizer, and just boiling the raw vegetable strips.
Right. That would just be a soggy sweet potato string.
Exactly. The transformation relies entirely on starch isolation. So to make these noodles, producers mash the sweet potatoes and wash them extensively with water.
Wait, wash them like in a giant strainer?
Kind of, yeah. The heavy starch granules actually separate from the water-soluble sugars, the proteins, and all that fibrous material. And those heavy starch granules eventually sink to the bottom.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Then they pour off the water, they dry that pure white starch, and then they extrude it with water into boiling water to form the actual noodle.
That is, I mean, it's essentially a process of structural reduction. It feels comparable to taking a reinforced concrete building and washing away all the cement, the drywall, the paint, until you were left with nothing but the internal steel rebar.
The sweet potato starch is the rebar. I like that.
Right.
That is a highly accurate way to visualize it. You are isolating the pure carbohydrate structure. And, you know, sweet potato starch behaves very differently than the starches we see in Western kitchens.
How so?
Well, it has a very specific ratio of two molecules, amylose and amylopectin. Because of its high amylose content, when this extracted starch is hydrated and heated, the molecular chains align in a way that allows light to pass directly through them.
Oh, so that is the science behind the translucence.
Exactly. They do not turn opaque and mushy like a traditional Italian wheat pasta. They become completely clear, giving them that spun glass appearance on the plate.
But that structural integrity must also dictate how they behave in the mouth, right? Like a noodle made entirely of pure starch rebar cannot possibly yield the same way a standard wheat noodle does.
Well, it creates an entirely different mouthfeel, which the dossier actually heavily emphasizes. The Korean culinary term for this textural quality is jilgum.
Jilgum.
Right. And because there is no gluten network like you would find in wheat pasta, the starch creates this signature, really satisfying chewiness.
Like it pushes back against the bite.
It totally pushes back. It possesses a springy, elastic resistance. I mean, it's a stark contrast to the soft yield of a traditional linguine, or even the brittle snap of a thin rice vermicelli.
Right, right.
So when the dossier uses the term glass noodle, we really have to divorce that from the concept of fragility. These noodles are resilient, highly elastic, and mechanically adept at absorbing and retaining liquid without disintegrating.
Okay, so that physical resilience explains what the noodle is, but it introduces a pretty massive logistical hurdle for the cook.
How do you mean?
Well, if we have a highly resilient, pure starch noodle, my assumption is that it requires a significant amount of time and effort to tame. Like, you're going to be boiling it forever. But the metrics in our dossier present a scenario that genuinely stopped me in my tracks.
Yes. The time estimates. The parameters provided by the source pack defy a lot of the preconceived notions that overseas cooks carry regarding Korean cuisine.
Yeah, because the dossier explicitly rates the expected difficulty of japchae as easy, and the expected cooking time is listed at approximately 25 minutes. I just have to push back on the logistics of that timeline.
You don't buy the 25 minutes.
Not at all. A 25-minute window for a complete dish featuring multiple vegetable components sounds like a severe bottleneck for a single home cook.
What?
I mean, think about it. If I am julienning carrots, spinning spinach, slicing mushrooms, and boiling a dense starch noodle, how are you prepping, cooking, and assembling all of that in the time it takes to boil a pot of water for a standard box of mac and cheese? It sounds like half the ingredients would go cold or just turn to mush.
Okay, your skepticism is entirely justified if you apply Western pan cooking methods to this dish.
Right.
But japchae does not require you to manage five different skillets simultaneously, nor does it require the final product to be served piping hot from the stove. The 25-minute timeline is totally achievable through a technique of sequential sautéing in a single pan.
Okay, walk me through the mechanics of that sequence, because single pan sounds much better.
Yeah, you utilize one skillet. You start by lightly sautéing your lightest colored, mildest ingredients, so often the onions. You cook them just to soften them and release their natural sugars. Then you remove them from the pan.
Okay, so they're out.
Right. Then, using the residual heat and oil in that same pan, you sauté the carrots. You remove them. You might quickly pan fry sliced mushrooms next to coax out their savory notes.
And what about the spinach and the noodles?
Meanwhile, your spinach only needs a 30-second blanch in boiling water, and your glass noodles boil in that same water for about 6 minutes.
So it operates like a single pan assembly line.
Yeah.
You're building flavor compounds in the skillet layer by layer without muddying the individual textures of the vegetables.
Precisely. And because the ingredients are combined in a large mixing bowl at the very end, rather than being simmered together in a sauce, temperature degradation is not an issue at all.
Oh, because it's a bowl, not a simmering pot.
Exactly. Japchae is traditionally served warm, or even just at room temperature. The anxiety of timing everything to hit the plate at a blistering heat simply does not apply here.
That is, wow. The temperature flexibility makes that 25-minute window suddenly feel incredibly manageable. It also shifts my mental model of the dish.
In what way?
It behaves less like a hot, heavy pasta dinner and more like a warm, structurally complex salad built on a resilient noodle foundation.
That's a great way to put it.
But if we pull back from the cooking mechanics and look at the actual flavor profile, the dossier throws us another curveball. The spice and flavor level is strictly categorized as mild.
Which serves as a really important corrective to the global perception of Korean food, honestly.
Because overseas, the cuisine is frequently reduced to its loudest elements, right? Like fiery red gochujang, bubbling spicy stews, or that deeply pungent, slow-fermented kimchi that takes months to develop.
Yeah, exactly. The dossier is shining a spotlight on everyday balanced cooking instead.
But looking at the strict limitations the source pack places on the ingredients, my instinct as an amateur cook is to panic slightly.
Why the panic?
The document emphatically states that this specific profile of japchae contains zero meat. No pork, no beef, no chicken, and no seafood. All are marked with a hard no. And it explicitly marks a vegetarian substitute as a yes.
Right. It's very clear about that.
Furthermore, it establishes this strict meta rule. Do not invent history and do not make medical claims about the dish.
Which is great because that meta rule acts as a necessary guardrail. It prevents us from over-romanticizing the food as some ancient, mystical, superfood cure-all, you know? We are forced to evaluate it purely on its culinary mechanics.
Okay, but evaluating it purely on mechanics, the flavor architecture feels incredibly vulnerable to me.
Vulnerable how?
Without a heavy animal protein to provide a savory backbone, and without a fiery chili paste to command the palate, how does the dish avoid tasting like plain sweet potato and a handful of bland vegetables? Like, how are we building umami without meat?
What? The absence of meat is not a deficit here. It is the deliberate foundation of a plant-forward flavor architecture. When you remove a dominant heavy protein from the equation, you actually allow the subtleties of the Maillard reaction to take center stage.
Oh, you mean the browning and caramelization of the vegetables during that sequential pan frying process we talked about?
Yes, exactly. Sautéing the onions, carrots, and mushrooms concentrates their natural glutamates and sugars. That provides your base layer of savory depth.
Okay, that makes sense.
But the true architectural pillar of the flavor profile is the seasoning liquid, which relies heavily on a precise ratio of fermented soy sauce and toasted sesame oil.
So the fermented soy provides the deep saline umami, while the toasted sesame oil contributes that rich, roasted, almost nutty aroma.
Right. And this brings us back to the mechanical properties of the sweet potato glass noodle. Those noodles do not simply sit in a pool of sauce at the bottom of the bowl.
So it's not like a sponge then?
Rather than relying on a tired culinary metaphor like a sponge, it's better to think of the glass noodle as a flavor delivery suspension system.
A suspension system. I like that.
Yeah. Because the extracted starch has that high amylose elastic structure we discussed earlier, it doesn't just break down into mush. Instead, the resilient matrix of the noodle traps the soy sauce and the sesame oil within its structure.
Ah, so that is the mechanism at play. The toasted sesame oil physically coats the starch molecules, creating this slick, luxurious mouthfeel, while the soy sauce penetrates the noodle to season it from the inside out.
That's exactly it. Every single bite carries a calibrated dose of that mild, savory profile. The dish really becomes a masterclass in textural contrast, you know? You have the soft crunch of the caramelized vegetables working against the slick, chewy resistance of the glass noodles.
That completely reframes the entire concept of a satisfying meal for me. It proves that you do not need a massive protein bomb or palate-scorching heat to achieve a complex, fulfilling plate of food. It relies entirely on the interplay of plant textures and fermented seasoning.
It's all about balance.
Right. And this concept of mindful assembly leads us to the final and perhaps most vital section of our source pack. The dossier leaves us with some very deliberate informational gaps, specifically regarding dietary restrictions.
Yeah, the sections detailing allergens and religious or dietary cautions are simply listed as not specified.
At first glance, that almost looks like an editorial oversight, right?
Yeah.
Like they just forgot to fill out the form. But when paired with the document's explicit instruction to actively consider overseas substitutions or, as it notes in the original Korean Haejojori Daechan, it feels like a deliberate shift in the power dynamic between the recipe and the cook.
It fundamentally changes the relationship. You are no longer passively following a rigid set of commands from a chef on a pedestal.
Yeah. By listing allergens as not specified, the dossier actively transfers the burden of safety and adaptation to the person holding the spatula. It forces the overseas cook to engage with their own pantry.
Absolutely.
Like, if I am cooking for someone with a gluten intolerance, the recipe is not going to hold my hand.
Mm-hmm.
It requires me to know that standard soy sauce contains wheat, and it trusts me to make the substitution to tamari on my own. It forces me to take total ownership of the ingredient sourcing.
And that transfer of responsibility highlights the broader cultural lesson embedded in the philosophy of Korean food one plate at a time. That authentic, everyday cooking is not about rigid adherence to an impossible ideal. It's about harmony and localized adaptability.
So I am standing in a grocery store thousands of miles from Seoul, and I cannot source a specific variety of Korean spinach. The dish doesn't just fail. I can look at the farmer's market, find some crisp Swiss chard or fresh kale, blanch it properly, and achieve the same textural goal.
Exactly. The structural integrity of the dish survives the substitution. Now, the dossier does warn the cook to be mindful of common mistakes, like improperly hydrating the sweet potato noodles until they turn to mush, or failing to season the ingredients while they're still warm enough to absorb the flavors.
Wait, you still have to execute the technique.
Yes. It dictates the technique, but it provides massive latitude on the produce itself.
Yeah.
As long as you maintain the balance of the chewy starch noodle and the mild sesame soy profile, you are honoring the spirit of Japchae.
It is a remarkably forgiving framework. It invites the home cook into the process rather than shutting them out with a list of demands that require, like, expensive international shipping to fulfill.
It really is beautifully designed that way.
So bringing all of these threads together, our source pack reveals that Japchae is far removed from the daunting, week-long culinary projects some might associate with traditional Korean cuisine.
Right. It's not a months-long fermentation project.
Not at all. It is a highly efficient, 25-minute, sequentially cooked dish built entirely around the mechanical marvel of sweet potato starch noodles. It offers a mild, adaptable, plant-forward gateway into Korean flavors, demonstrating that deep, umami-rich satisfaction requires only a respect for texture, a few balanced seasonings, and the willingness of the cook to adapt to their surroundings.
It just requires a foundational understanding of the ingredients, really, and the confidence to apply those principles to whatever your local market provides.
It completely demystifies the entire process. Well, I want to leave you, the listener, with a final thought to ponder off mic today, building on that initial incredible physical transformation we discussed earlier.
The potato to glass pipeline.
Exactly. We explored how something as heavy, dense, and earthbound as a sweet potato can be mechanically reduced and transformed into a clear, delicate, incredibly resilient glass noodle. So the next time you open your pantry or stare into your vegetable crisper, take a closer look at your everyday staples. What other humble, unassuming ingredients might be hiding an entirely different structural identity, just waiting for a curious cook to extract it?
This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.